And we are playing with fire as we find out more about what's going on with our weather. And to do that with us today, we have a meteorologist by the name of Paul Douglas. He is chief meteorologist with Weather Nation TV, and he's written a couple of fabulous essays. One included says, Top 10 Reasons Republicans Should Believe in Climate Change and Start Talking About It. We're also going to hear about why he said the following, I'm seeing things I never thought I would see in my career. The analogy I give is Mother Nature picking up the weather DVR, putting our seasons on fast forward, turning the volume of extreme weather events up to a deafening 11. That is our first half, and in our second half, we'll bring back our friends to the Green Front, and that is Carol Oldham and Drew Grand. Drew Grand is with the Sierra Club, and Carol is with the National Wildlife Federation to talk about a new report called A Turning Point for Massachusetts. Will federal and state leaders take advantage of America's golden opportunity? They're talking about the wind, and I am talking to you from downtown San Francisco in a high-rises that is the home center for the Sierra Club. So very appropriately that we should have Drew Grand from the Sierra Club on the East Coast from the Massachusetts area joining us today. But first, Paul Douglas, welcome to the Green Front.
It's great to be with you, Betsy. Thank you.
I have to say congratulations. A meteorologist who gets it, and not only gets it, but is trying to make sure your fellow meteorologist starts connecting the dots. Were you always one who believed that climate change was a real threat to our weather, to our way of life, to our lives, our livelihood, even our livestock, I've been saying lately, with the incredible droughts continuing to take its toll on cattle ranchers and farmers across the middle of this country?
I was initially skeptical, and people have trouble believing that, but that's the case. When James Hansen came out in 1988 and linked the record heat and drought to climate change back in 88, I thought at the time maybe he was jumping the gun, that there wasn't enough evidence. And so I, like every other scientist, every other meteorologist, every other climate scientist, comes to this from a position of not cynicism, but skepticism. All scientists, by definition, are skeptical. And so you have to win them over. And you can't do that with rhetoric or politics or position papers. You do that with data. And I've been reacting to data on the ground, facts on the ground. And it pains me that the party of conservatism, the party of Teddy Roosevelt that launched the park system, and Richard Nixon, in spite of some of the nasty things, he also launched the EPA, that my party, at least a significant percentage of people in the Republican Party, don't acknowledge the science. It's not a function of believing anything. This is not belief. It's looking at the data, connecting the dots, and coming up with theories to explain what we're seeing. And right now, the most logical theory is that man-made greenhouse gases, 90 trillion tons, that's 90 trillion hot air balloons full of greenhouse gases in 50 years, according to the Department of Energy, is having an effect. And, you know, based on what I'm seeing on the weather maps, what a lot of other meteorologists are seeing, it's just been a head-scratching couple of years, Betsy.
So what turned your head around on this? Was it one event? Was it a slow awakening? What was your eco-epiphany?
My eco-epiphany, well said. I think it was back in the mid-90s. I was on the air at WCCO and Care 11 here in the Twin Cities, and when you're a meteorologist, you live the weather. It's not like a 9-to-5 where you go to work. I mean, you embrace the weather. You're constantly checking the data, checking the models. Why did this forecast bust? You know, why was I right on those rare occasions? And I noticed back in the mid-90s that the weather in Minnesota, my home turf, was becoming more extreme, that I could not explain this away as random, variable weather extremes. We've always had ups and downs with temperature and moisture, no question. We've had droughts, we've had floods. But just the frequency and the intensity, you know, this whole weather on steroids analogy, poor Barry Bonds, I mean, we're going to remember him as the guy that created the weather on steroids analogy, but it's really true.
Hey, you know what? Don't put poor and Barry Bonds in the same sentence. I'm from San Francisco here. He's got a pretty good salary, despite his troubles. But
he's laughing all the way to the bank. That's very true. But I just noticed looking at the weather and tracking the weather in the mid-90s, even before Al Gore came out with this movie, that something had changed. And I started talking about this on the air, trying to include climate science in my reports, and I was amazed at the pushback, at just how nasty some of the people, some of the viewers were, you know, who instantly thought that this was a political message and I was prescribing policy. And I wasn't, and I'm not. I'm a meteorologist. I'm looking at the data. And I think other meteorologists are starting to wake up and try to include climate information. But it's like swimming upstream, Betsy. You know, news directors hesitate to have anything on their air that could be a negative, that could turn away some percentage of the viewers. And it's sort of the third rail of television meteorology, trying to talk about climate, because you know you're going to tick off 20-30% of the viewers, because they equate this with Al Gore and liberal politics. And I said, no, this is science.
Okay, and let's start. Go ahead. I want to ask you a question.
Sorry to get worked up, but
I want you to get worked up. We get worked up here on the show all the time, and you sound like a very thoughtful guy. You are, you know, a scientific type, being a meteorologist. I don't know if you have any psychology background, but before we go any further, I just want to ask you, what is up with this? Because I have been on Fox News a half dozen times, you know, sparring with Hannity, and I get death threats, or I should be careful with that. I get death wishes, people wishing I would slip my wrist because I dared suggest something as radical, the one that elicited the most hate responses when I said that humans are part of nature. You would have thought, you know, I said that, you know, I'm a Martian and I've come to take over the planet and, you know, try to sing kumbaya.
Good grief. Well, I share your pain there. And I wrote a book for Barnes & Noble called Restless Skies back in 2004, and I included a chapter on climate change, and I was on Sean Hannity's show, and you know, I like Sean. He's great at what he does. He's a good entertainer. He's engaging. But during the commercial break, you know, he kept looking over at me and saying, "You're a liberal, aren't you? You're a liberal," because I'm tracking climate science somehow. That made me a liberal. And I reminded him. I said, "Look, I said you're a Christian. I said." Luke, there's a chapter in Luke that says man has been appointed as a steward for the management of God's property, and ultimately he will give account for his stewardship. So unless you're going to go in and start cherry-picking the New Testament, we have a moral obligation to care for our kids like our parents cared for us. And just to put the blinders on and say, you know what, we're going to keep drilling and burning and mining, and we'll let our grandkids clean up our mess. There is something fundamentally immoral about that. And I just want to be able to pass the red face test with my grandkids 20 years from now that, hey, your old man did everything in his power to alert people that this is a legitimate concern, and that just like we did with acid rain and the ozone hole, there are technological market fixes for this. We're not going to be able to solve this overnight. And I think that gets to the psychology of this. You know, therapists say that people tend to reject anything where there isn't an obvious and instant solution. It's easier to turn the channel, turn away, go back to entertainment, go back to distractions. And I understand that, you know, there is a sense of gloom and doom, and I don't want to minimize this. This is the greatest environmental threat that we face. But I'm a naive optimist. We have the technology. We have the entrepreneurs. I think market forces with smart, business-friendly regulation will figure this out. But we have to find a way to price carbon. And I don't want to. I'm not a policy wonk. I have no political aspirations. Just the thought of that makes my teeth ache. But I know that we can figure this out. But President Obama, I think, has an historic opportunity to step up and tell a story. That's something that Ronald Reagan did very well. He was a great storyteller. Connect the dots. What is our Marshall Plan for energy independence, for American energy independence? And why are we just saying, you know what? Let's just let all the innovation go to China and Europe. We'll be buying our solar panels and wind farms from China. What's wrong with that?
in the middle of this, you know, Buy America campaign, you know, Made in America is all the rage, and yet there's this disconnect. You know, should we start a whole new era of importing, you know, clean tech from China?
No, it's ridiculous. And I'm not saying we shouldn't take advantage of our own natural resources. But we have to be very smart about that and realize that the continued burning of fossil fuels is going to be impacting our weather and our climate and agriculture and transportation and, you know, coastal concerns. Anybody living within a couple of feet of sea level, this is going to be a big deal in the next 30 years. But the innovation required to transition us to a clean tech, green tech economy is of the order of what happened during World War II or sending men to the moon in the 1960s. It will require a wholesale transformation of our industry that is going to ultimately hire hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of Americans, and transform our economy and keep us on the leading, bleeding edge. I mean, we are a nation of innovators. Turn us loose on this. But we need somebody to set the stage, tell us a story, here's how we're going to get there, and provide the incentives, and then step back and let the markets work. I'm a big believer that the markets will be a big part of this solution. We can't regulate our way to prosperity, but there has to be a way forward. And if we don't get serious about this, I mean, frankly, you know, people in Beijing are just laughing at us, the fact that we're still debating climate science. Say what you will about the Chinese, they accept the science. I have relatives in Europe. They think we are mad. They are think
exactly.
They think we are nuts, Betsy.
We are.
Still,
I mean, we are. To be losing precious time when that's exactly what we don't have.
No, we don't have time. And I read the Bill McKibben piece in Rolling Stone, you know, the terrifying new math of climate change. And I think we've got this fundamental disconnect that we can burn maybe a fifth of the carbon still left in the ground, about a fifth of what's left, and not surpass 2 degrees Celsius. Roughly 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit, what most climate scientists believe to be a tipping point. So, you know, what do you do if you're ExxonMobil, if you're Shell? How do you tell your shareholders that, hey, all that oil left in the ground, all that coal, we can harvest about a fifth of it without pushing us over a cliff? And that's why we have all this pushback and the debate and the manufactured controversy and the confusion. And the average American on the street still thinks there are two sides to this debate. No, just like there aren't two sides to gravity. I mean, the science is the science is the science. And we need to accept that. And once we accept it and get past denial and get to acceptance, we can figure out America first solutions, but this denial and confusion and obfuscation, I mean, it's just, you know, we're losing precious time.
And what about where it's coming from? The fossil fuel industry, the Koch brothers, deep pockets that seem to be endless. And what about Bill McKibben's approach to go after, you know, the fossil fuel industry, the oil companies? He feels that, you know, because they do have so much to gain, they're not going to stop until every last drop is extracted.
Yeah, this is a challenge for capitalism. How do you, in a market-based economy, how do you tell one sector of the economy that you can't grow the way that you want to grow? You can't expand. I mean, I understand the sense of paranoia right now that must be in every boardroom of every fossil fuel company on the planet. I get that on some level, but I still believe the science is the science, and that there are ways to do things and to clean up the air, and it's not going to be cheap, but I do believe there are technological solutions that can take the edge off this. But we have to call it what it is, and that there is still this grassroots campaign to sow confusion in the minds of Americans, and frankly, to sow confusion in the minds of Congress. It's amazing. I think Americans are actually more forward-thinking, moderate, and reasonable than our representatives in Washington, D.C., who can, you know, a significant percentage especially on the right side of the aisle, continue to think that this is a hoax or that this is an attempt to engineer socialism and ramp up on the regulation side, and that this, you know, the whole one world government and UN takeover, and I mean the tinfoil hat crowd really gloms onto this, and it's frightening. And you know, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that conspiracy theorists in general are really attracted to this subject, that somehow this is a global conspiracy and all the scientists are in on this, including NOAA and NASA and every major scientific organization on the planet. I'm sorry, I don't buy into the conspiracy theories. I just don't.
What do you think of Anthony Watts, who was featured too prominently in the eyes of many on this recent PBS report, did about a 10-minute piece on the state of climate change belief. And I think they mentioned in that report that still some 68% of Americans believe there is a debate. And the more that they put the Anthony Watts of the world on there and not you, that foments that, you know, sense of, you know, inconclusiveness.
I believe, from what I read, that Mr. Watts receives a significant amount of funding, or has in the past, from the Heartland Institute, which, you know, has made no bones about it, trying to keep the debate and confusion alive. And again, there's a lot of money in play. And it's not just Anthony Watts, who I think is one of the more prominent skeptics. And, you know, he brings up the whole issue of sighting of weather instruments, that the temperature record isn't accurate. I'm sorry, there's a huge body of evidence that refutes that, including the scientists at NOAA and NASA. The first thing they did was make sure that the urban heat island, that the heat being given off cities, doesn't bias the temperature record. Scientists are skeptical by nature. And so, you know, the scientists that continue to bring up the sun as a reason, oh, it's all solar because, you know, what's happening on Mars? And solar activity has actually dropped in the last 30 years. So they've gone through all these other possibilities line by line. And the data is the data is the data. And the sooner we wake up to it, the better we will be as a nation. And we can turn the page and move forward and come up with solutions. But the more that we keep arguing back and forth and turning this into a political football, this is a litmus test to be a conservative? You have to deny the science? I mean, that's ridiculous. And I'm embarrassed for my party. And I there's a significant percentage, you know, of conservatives who still believe there's a place for science. You know, I'm a Christian. I have faith in God. I believe that, you know, I believe that faith is critical. But when it comes to climate science, no faith is required. The science is overwhelming. If you take time to dive into this and really look at peer-reviewed research, not some blog post, but actually dig into the peer-reviewed science, it's overwhelming. It's not even close.
And guess what happens? Every time people do look into it, they come out like my co-host, D.R. Tucker, who I'm sorry, and he's sorry couldn't join us today. He's a Republican who didn't believe and read the IPCC report from 2007 and went, holy moly. And he's been angry at his fellow Republicans and libertarians ever since. And he went from being a conservative Republican to a moderate simply because of this issue. And inevitably, if somebody doesn't believe, they've never, you know, seen an inconvenient truth, taken the time to read any of the scientific research, and yet they stand in their dogma, and I think they should be really standing in something else, especially if they have children and grandchildren on this planet. And some of these people are talk show hosts and big time television radio hosts. Shame on them for not taking the time to look into it. If they're going to spew ridiculous nonsense about the science being inconclusive and there being a debate, and not look at 98%+ of scientists believing it's real, humans are causing it, and that it's urgent, then how dare they say something? Why are they embarrassing themselves? And what's happening with your fellow, with your profession? Are you embarrassed for your fellow meteorologists who, I don't know if you have any sense of the percentages, but many of them are still not, quote, forecasting the facts? And I would also like to know your opinion of that wonderful group. We had Brad Jansen on from Forecast the Facts last week.
Right. Well, first of all, I think we should vote the bums out. I mean, I think the founding fathers would be horrified that we've turned politics into a career. I mean, it, you know, the old model was spend 4 years, 8 years, do your service, serve your country, go home. And now we have, you know, lifelong politicians who spend 80% of their time campaigning and raising money to run negative attack ads on television. I mean, it's just absolute, it's ludicrous what's happened there. But I think people, you know, the James Inhofs of the world need to be held accountable. And anybody under the age of 30 or 35 takes this subject very seriously. They vote. And I would encourage, you know, your considerable audience to find out, you know, who are the people that are perpetrating these denials of reality and denials of science. And the best thing we can do is get them out of office and get people in office who acknowledge the science, not believe anything. This isn't a matter of believing. It's a matter of accepting climate science. 98%, I mean, if 98% of cardiologists, Betsy, said, you have a heart condition and here's what you need to do, would you really believe the two guys in the back with duct tape and magnets? You'd probably listen to the cardiologists. You know, the vast consensus that says this is the diagnosis, this is what you need to do to survive. And climate scientists, and I track what these guys are saying. I'm on a panel with some of the leading climate scientists. I'm one of the token meteorologists. And these guys passed worried about 5 years ago. Now they're apoplectic that we aren't doing anything.
And part of their fury is aimed at, very appropriately, at mainstream media for not, you know, connecting the dots enough. We saw a little bit of a blip of that activity in July when all these records were shattered for heat, for drought, you know, flooding, hurricanes where they're not supposed to be, tornadoes touching down in Brooklyn. I mean, you know, it's calmed down a little bit, but the problems have not gone away. They're only going to get worse. And then there's, you know, Fox News, and then there's, you know, the preponderance of talk show hosts who are continuing to spew this nonsense. I mean, shouldn't they be held just as accountable as our politicians, especially given how much they're making and laughing all the way to the bank?
I think some of this, you're absolutely right. Some of this goes to science literacy, and some of the producers and news directors, you know, at a national level and a local level, they haven't taken the time to dig into the science and realize that this is a real issue and that they need to be, I mean, in a perfect world, journalism is holding up a mirror to society and saying, this is what's happening. But this whole sense of false balance that, you know, somehow 4,000 climate scientists on one side can be balanced out by an Anthony Watts, and we have to be balanced. Well, where's the balance in the tobacco debate today? I mean, you know, most people acknowledge that smoking causes cancer, and yet back in the 70s, Philip Morris, you know, spent many, many millions of dollars trotting out their pseudoscientists trying to convince people that you can't prove that smoking three packs a day of Marlboro killed poor Aunt Betty. And in the 70s, there was debate. People said, well, I'm not quite sure. Yeah, there may be a link. Now we look back and we say, of course. And yet that's what's happening today, multiplied by 1,000. And some of the same characters that fought, you know, that tried to keep the tobacco thing going and the acid rain and the ozone hole, some of these same characters are involved today, manufacturing doubt and uncertainty and preventing any real action from being done in Washington, D.C. It's criminal. I hope these people are held accountable. There will be a day of reckoning at some point. And again, the best thing we can do is vote.
Yeah, I call them the fossil fools, but they're fooling too many Americans, and that's not so funny. Could you tell us what happens when you go to the meteorological conferences? I think there was one just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, there was one.
Given how outspoken you are and how clear-headed you are on this, and you're not compromising, and I love you as a guest, we'll have to have you back on again. You know, what kind of conversations are happening, you know, in the corners? Are they threatening you directly face-to-face? Are they avoiding you? Do you have a small circle, you know, that's growing? And are people kind of coming over to your side? And what do you think of Forecast of Facts? I think they're doing a tremendous service.
I think people need to be held accountable. And, you know, the local TV meteorologist is the science ambassador in each city, and they have a responsibility to report on science, whether it's short-term weather or whether it's climate trends. And the AMS has come out in no uncertain terms. There may have been some gray 10 years ago. There's no gray anymore in terms of what's happening with the climate. And I think, you know, we have an ethical responsibility. We have a seal of approval. There's now the CBM, the Certified Broadcast Meteorology Seal. And I think we have a responsibility to acknowledge what's happening. But again, this has gotten caught up in ideology and politics, and a number of TV meteorologists. I want to believe it's a minority. I don't know for a fact. I think Brad at Forecast the Facts has a better handle on that. But what I noticed, and I left
more hopeful than when I arrived, Betsy,
there are meteorologists in a number of cities around the country. Mike Nelson in Denver, Greg Fischel at WRAL in Raleigh, people who were skeptical even 5 years ago that took the time to dig into the science, the peer-reviewed science, and are now reporting on this on the air, and they're getting a lot of heat. And this is why I think a lot of television meteorologists still resist this. They may not have the time, they may not, you know, it takes time. You can't do this in 15 seconds, and they're given 3, maybe 4 minutes tops to talk about the weather. How can you be true to climate science if you've got a narrow time window? So that's a challenge, and that goes back to the news directors and just educating the journalists in this country that there aren't two sides to this. This is the state of the science. And so I think, you know, pulling in the Poynter Institute, the Frank Maggots of the world, the news doctors, and convincing them that this is a legitimate subject that needs to be reported on, and somebody at each station needs to be bringing this home. How is this going to affect the Bay Area? Rising sea level, obviously a concern. Peter Glick at the Pacific Institute just published something on yesterday on why folks living within a couple of feet of sea level need to be taking this very seriously in the coming years. And I don't know if it's going to take a climate calamity. What happened in Europe, 30,000 people died the summer of 2003. Most of them didn't have air conditioning. Most of them were elderly. You know, is it going to take a couple of climate calamities of some sort before politicians wake up and before people say, hey, maybe we should take some steps here to try to mitigate this?
Well, what about just what happened in this country this summer?
Yeah, well, listen, I've noticed a definite trend. Interest picks up in the summer when it gets hot and when we get more severe storms, and those storms are being spiked increasingly.
And droughts and fires.
Absolutely. And then during the winter, you know, that's when the skeptics, every time it snows in Minnesota, I'll get 20 emails, you know.
Oh,
where's
yeah.
your global warming now, Paul?
Yep.
It's like, so, and people look out the window, and there's still a disconnect. People confuse weather, because we're hardwired to look out the window and acknowledge the weather. But keeping a global perspective is challenging, I think, even for meteorologists, keeping that true global perspective. But I've been trying to do that and communicate that, and it is troubling. I mean, even the Wall Street Journal last week, the 6 lowest levels of Arctic ice have all been observed in the last 6 years. You know, it's about 50% lower than it was back in the 1979 when the satellite record began. And so there's a pretty good barometer of what's happening over the Northern Hemisphere. And as I tell the skeptics, I say, look, this is the first time we've had warming in both hemispheres, and there's no obvious astronomical trigger. It may have been warmer 1,000 years ago, but the Earth was closer to the sun. There was an astronomical reason why it was warmer. And the fact that greenhouse gases have spiked 40% and we're getting this spike in temperature worldwide, it's either the mother of all coincidences or there's something here.
Mm, indeed. We're just about out of time, Paul. Really appreciate your comments. Do you want to leave us with at least some of the top 10 reasons Republicans should start believing climate change is real and break their climate silence or their dismissal of climate science?
Well, boy, yeah, where do I begin there?
Give us your top three. Maybe their children, their grandchildren, and love of country, community, planet. How's that?
Yeah, this is a national security issue. The military, the Pentagon, takes this very seriously. Nobody at the military, at least in a position of power, takes this for granted. So I think even if you just look at this geopolitically and our military position in the world, this is going to be a big deal. Shifting weather patterns. We are seeing changes. A spike in wildfires out west. Our water resources, you know, stuff we take for granted, we will not be taking for granted. I think in our lifetime, Betsy, one of the major western cities will probably run out of water. And, you know, I'll be called an alarmist for saying that, but just looking at the trends, I think that's the case.
Well, didn't Atlanta, Georgia, almost run out of water a year or two ago?
Absolutely. Atlanta came within, I think, a couple of weeks of running out of water. But, you know, a Las Vegas or a Phoenix, and what happened, you know, will a major city or even a moderate-sized city burn down? We came very close with Colorado Springs. I mean, the close-in suburbs of Colorado Springs went up in smoke earlier this week. So superheated summers, more heat-related ailments, more drought, paying more for food because I think farming is going to be more challenging, more acidic oceans. It's just a long list, and more severe storms. I mean, we're seeing an uptick in the extreme rainfall events. I'm not a statistician, but we seem to be getting a 1 in 500-year storm every 3 to 4 years. Mm. And at some point, you step back and you say, something has changed. This is not your grandfather's weather anymore. And the sooner we all acknowledge this, the sooner we can figure out some solutions to at least take the edge off the worst of the effects.
Paul Douglas, I feel better just knowing you're out there. Thank you so much for what you're doing, and we'll have you back. We'd love to have you be our resident meteorologist because you get it. You're a Republican. You have a great way of expressing yourself, so keep it up and raise the volume, and we'll be talking to you hopefully in the months to come.
Well, the Republican Party may be kicking me out here any day, but...
That might not be a bad thing, Paul. We'll welcome you. Welcome you. Their loss is our gain.
Appreciate everything you're doing to get the word out.
Thank you. And when we come back, we'll be speaking with two more people who are doing everything they can to get word out. Drew Grand of the Sierra Club and Carol Oldham of the National Wildlife Federation talking about the wind and what new research shows about its potential. We'll be right back.
You stepped out way too far upon the